joined by our guest from goal.com today to give us a shout. And all things US men's national team. It was a massive win down in Jamaica for the US men's national team. Brad Evans with that late, late winner after an even almost just as late Jermaine Beckford equaliser seemed to have crushed the US's hopes of taking a massive win down in Jamaica for the US men's national team. Brad Evans with that late, late winner after an even almost just as late Jermaine Beckford equaliser seemed to have crushed the US's hopes of taking a win away out of Jamaica in the hexagonal round. 3 points, though, came their way. Josie Altidore got on the score sheet as well. Rafa will put action from the weekend. He is goal.com's very own Mr. Seth Vitelny joining us on the line today. Seth, how are you, mate? It's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure to have you on, mate. It's been far too long since we last had you on the show. How are you?
I know. I've been well. How about yourself?
We're doing very well indeed. Very well. I know that Rafa is all smiles today after the results on the weekend, at least for the national team. But should we be smiling too much about the result against Jamaica? The US made it a little hard on themselves.
They did. And I think, you know, all things considered, when you get 3 points on the road in the hexagonal, you can pretty much forget about all the little issues here and there and be happy with the result, because it's never easy. Obviously, it was another lead lost, which is something that we've seen become a trend in this qualifying cycle on the road. The U.S. is now perfect 5-for-5 in away matches this cycle in terms of getting the lead and losing the lead. We've seen them tie games, we've seen them lose games, and we've seen them come back and win. But, you know, there's, I guess, two ways of looking at that. On one hand, it's great that in five games they've been able to actually get out to a 1-0 lead. But on the other hand, we've seen them come back and win. But, you know, there's, I guess, two ways of looking at that. On one hand, it's great that in five games they've been able to actually get out to a 1-0 lead. But on the other hand, you'd really like to see them be able to hold on to the lead. In five games they've been able to actually get out to a 1-0 lead. But on the other hand, you'd really like to see them be able to hold on to the lead a little bit better. And, you know, on Friday night, it looked for all the world that they were going to drop 2 points after conceding in the 89th minute. But of course, just like everybody predicted, Brad Evans steps up and scores the winner. And it was a welcome sight for U.S. fans, for sure.
It was an emphatic way to win a game, coming back with just a handful of seconds left on the clock, and for Evans to get that 90-second with just a handful of seconds left on the clock, and for Evans to get that 90-second minute winner. What does that show about the character of this side to go lose that lead with 89 minutes gone, and then to still pull something out of the bag so late on?
Yeah, it shows that the team, he started the same lineup against Germany and against Jamaica, so I think with a little bit of cohesion on the field, you can start to see the guys getting a little more comfortable with each other. And when that happens, when you have guys that are in roles and they know their roles, then I think the results start to come. And Brad Evans is kind of a new face on the scene, and I don't think a lot was really expected of him when he was added to the roster. He hadn't really had any meaningful caps before this round of games, but Klinsmann appears to have unearthed some sort of a gem that, you know, maybe previous U.S. coaches hadn't noticed, and Evans has really taken his chance in the last couple games, and you can see that he might be a big part of the squad going forward.
We've seen this,
you know, maybe previous U.S. coaches hadn't noticed, and Evans has really taken his chance in the last couple games, and you can see that he might be a big part of the squad going forward.
We've seen this back four get changed time and time again, and you mentioned about this being the same side that that beat Germany in that friendly just a few days beforehand. Do you like this back four? Because there's so much criticism and so much positivity. There's so much of a divide in US soccer fans about the stability of this back four. Do you think having this back only increase that stability, and we'll actually see what Klinsmann can see in this four that he's got at the moment?
Yeah, definitely. And I think in terms of this current back four, there is definitely a divide between the center backs and the outside backs. Right now, I think Klinsmann has really settled on
four that he's got at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. And I think in terms of this current back four, there is definitely a divide between the center backs and the outside backs. Right now, I think Klinsmann has really settled on Beisler and Gonzalez as his center back pairing, his top choice. He you know, as recently as a few months ago, was the number one center back, and now he appears to be relegated to number three on the depth chart. But Klinsmann is really rolling with Omar Gonzalez. He started every game at center back in 2013 for the U.S. so far, and it's just been a matter of finding that pairing for him. And it seems like Beisler and Gonzalez have some sort of a chemistry. They performed pretty well against Jamaica. And, of course, we remember in the Azteca, those two started next to each other against Mexico and played really well. So I think that it's Gonzalez and Beisler in the middle for now. And Cameron and Goodson are solid options in terms of depth. And, of course, Cameron has the ability to play other positions, which we've seen. In terms of the outside backs, I do feel like they're sort of placeholders for the moment. DeMarcus Beasley has actually done pretty well as a left back, moving forward, connecting passes. But we see that he is a little limited in one-on-one situations. And I think, you know, you can get away with Beasley in certain games, but when you're playing against really top teams and you have a really high-quality right winger on that other side of the field, Beasley is going to be exposed. And so, okay for now, and I think that you can get away with him in most hexagonal games, but is he the left-back option that's going to be potentially starting in Brazil next summer? I kind of doubt it. I think they're trying Fabian Johnson out at left mid to give him a shot there, but for now, I would still put Fabian Johnson atop the depth chart. I kind of doubt it. I think they're trying Fabian Johnson out at left mid to give him a shot there, but for now, I would still put Fabian Johnson atop the depth chart at left back going forward. And at right back, again, Brad Evans, like I mentioned, has really done well and shown that he can be a really done well and shown that he can be a valuable contributor to the team. But with Steve Cherundolo and Timothy Chandler away from the team, Chandler is injured, and Cherundolo is also recovering from an injury. I still think those two guys get in the mix. Specifically, Cherundolo is also recovering from an injury. I still think those two guys get in the mix. Specifically, Cherundolo, he hasn't really done anything to lose the job. He's been injured. But if he's at top form, I would still put him atop the depth chart.
Just ahead of him for Beasley, does that not provide him maybe the extra support? So it actually gives us a stronger left-back position than just having Fabian Johnson and a more attacking adept and maybe slightly less defensively adept midfielder ahead of him.
Right, and it depends on
defensively adept midfielder ahead of him.
Right, and it depends on the defensive work that Fabian Johnson does. And what's interesting was in the Jamaica match, Klinsmann actually took Johnson out and put in Edgar Castillo in his place, and his reasoning for that was that he wanted to give Beasley the defensive work that Fabian Johnson does. And what's interesting was in the Jamaica match, Klinsmann actually took Johnson out and put in Edgar Castillo in his place, and his reasoning for that was that he wanted to give Beasley a little bit more help defensively. Now, we've seen Castillo play mostly as we see those two start tomorrow night against Panama. And if Johnson can get back a bit more and help out and still prove to be dangerous attacking-wise, then that is a combination down the left that can be effective.
And as well in this U.S. men's national team, almost it receives plenty of praise. I do apologize there, Seth. I'm really getting caught up with this sentence. He gets a lot of attention, but maybe not as much as he potentially deserves. But Graham Zusi having a pretty good night on a night that where. Having a pretty good night on a night that where U.S. men's national team players kind of struggled on occasion. Zusi having a top night and has been consistently good. How good is it for U.S. soccer to see him not have a kind of a sophomore slump internationally?
Yeah, definitely. He's real
consistently good. How good is it for U.S. soccer to see him not have a kind of a sophomore slump internationally?
Yeah, definitely. He's really emerged. And you said it because he sort of broke out last year as an option for the national team. And this year, he's really just for Jozy Altidore. But what he does almost as well, and I know what Klinsmann appreciates, is he tracks back defensively. He does a lot of that dirty work, and he just runs and runs all game. You'll see him from end line to end line. And I know that that's something that really helps out the U.S., especially a guy like Brad Evans at right back, who's still learning the position. To have a guy like Zusi who's there tracking back to help him out, to give him support, give him another option, has been really huge for Evans in his transition, because you have to remember that Evans doesn't play right back on the club level. He plays in the midfield for the Sounders. And so to have a guy who's so inexperienced at the club, or he's so inexperienced playing a certain position and put on the club level, he plays in the midfield for the Sounders. And so to have a guy who's so inexperienced at the club, or he's so inexperienced playing a certain position and put him in that position at the international level where he's not really experienced playing either, I think a lot of Evans' success in the last couple of games, you have to give Zusi some credit for as well.
It's been fantastic to watch Graham Zusi evolve as a player and come into this U.S. men's national team. They now have a big game coming up against Panama on Tuesday, back home on U.S. soil up in Seattle. First and foremost, are we expecting a far better performance from a U.S. side, not only to get the 3 points, but to get three good 3 points as well, being on home soil?
Yeah, I think you can be, at least on paper, more straightforward 3 points that the U.S. has, but they are missing a couple of key players, and Zusi with the yellow card suspension and Jermaine Jones with a concussion. But on the other side, you have Panama missing Blas Perez, who's one of their best players, star striker. He has a virus, intestinal issues, vomiting, diarrhea, et cetera, et cetera. So he's back in Panama. And I think, honestly, even though the U.S. is losing two and Panama is losing one, that's a trade-off that works out in the U.S.'s favor, simply because when you're talking about a team like Panama, they don't have a whole lot of difference makers, and what Perez is a difference maker. He's a guy that has proven to be a very good striker on the international level, and so the drop-off between him and his replacement is going to be a lot larger than the drop-off that the U.S. has between their, depending on how this pitch plays. I think that this is a game where the U.S. can be confident they'll be able to go out and get a good result.
They may not have too many difference makers, but they do have an undefeated record at the moment in their first four games in the hexagonal round. Panama, is it a side that the U.S. could potentially underestimate and that could cause them problems? Where, if so, where will they hit? Where will they find those gaps in the U.S. Ranks?
Yeah, they are undefeated. They've had three of their four games at home. And their one away game was at Jamaica, where they drew. So, you know, they're definitely a quality side. And I think in terms of guys that can give the U.S. problems, you look at Luis Tejada, who's Blas Perez's normal strike partner. Now he's going to have to shoulder a lot of the load himself. But he's a quality striker. He's been playing at Toluca in the Mexican League the last couple of years. So that's definitely a guy that can give the U.S. backline some issues. Specifically through the middle with Gonzalez and Beasler. So the U.S. will have to be careful of that, but, you know, this is definitely a team that, at least on paper, they should be able to beat, and with a crowd in Seattle behind him, with Altidore back in scoring form and Dempsey doing what he does, it's a game the U.S. should be very disappointed if they get anything other than 3 points.
And it'd be a big 3 points, because you'd suddenly be looking at the halfway stage of the hexagonal with 10 points and be 3 points ahead of Mexico, 4 points ahead of Panama, 6 points in front of Honduras, potentially. I mean, this could be really the U.S. embedding themselves almost in this top three at a very early stage in this hexagonal round.
Yeah, and you look at the number of points that you need to qualify for the World Cup. The last two cycles, that magic number has been 16. So the U.S. right now is on 7. And you look at a win on Tuesday night gets them to 10, and then potentially another win against Honduras next week gets them to 13. If you have two wins, I mean, you're essentially in, because you're sitting on 13 points and you've got four games remaining. Two of them are at home. So, I mean, if you're sitting there with 3 points short of 16 and only needing three of your last four games, essentially, the U.S. will be in excellent shape if they're able to get a result in this game and then another 3 points next week.
You were mentioning, obviously, Brad Enfins, and it looks like we're going to potentially see Eddie Johnson coming in to replace Zusi in that U.S. men's national team starting lineup. The Sounders not missing these two guys too much, with Obafemi Martins playing fantastically well and Rosales as well in that Seattle Sounders side. A big win against Vancouver in a Cascadia Cup game. Vancouver continue to struggle against Portland and against Seattle. When are they going to break this duck?
Yeah, it's been frustrating for them, and especially they're not that loss on Saturday isn't going to sit well with them. And I know you mentioned a couple guys on the Sounders, but you're going to have to mention Lamar Nagel as well, because he's really stepped up the last couple of months. And on Saturday night, I mean, he was the best player on the field. He won a penalty kick, he got a goal, he got an assist. And I think that the Whitecaps will feel a little hard done by because of the nature of that loss, specifically with that field, which is going to become a talking point, specifically if anything happens in the U.S. game in terms of injuries. But we've already seen it happen. Vancouver lost their center back, Andy O'Brien, to an injury. After the game, they were speculating that it was a product of that temporary grass surface. But O'Brien goes out, Clausura comes in, and immediately concedes a really dumb penalty kick. And the Sounders are able to equalize, and then later on they're able to win the game. But Vancouver's got to be cursing their luck. I mean, they're up 2-1 in the second half. They had to think that they were at least going to get a result.
Elsewhere, just quickly around Major League Soccer, because I know we have to let you go, Seth. We're taking up plenty of time already, and we appreciate you taking the time out here to join us on W. When you look at Chicago at the moment, we were talking with Mike McGee last week. Are you surprised that Frank Lopez has put him straight in as a seemingly out-and-out striker? But not only that, but McGee, 3-3 at the moment for Chicago as well, paying back that faith in his finishing ability that Lopez is putting into him.
Yeah, they definitely need someone to step up, because we've seen Sergio McDonald, who was a designated player last year, not really do much for them this year. So to get a guy like McGee, who's been in such good goal-scoring form for the Galaxy, you almost have to put him back in. You have to put him into the starting lineup for Chicago from their perspective. And he's been definitely paying them backing and also trying to figure out that defense. I think they've really missed Friedrich this year, who's been injured, and I'm not sure if he's going to be back with that team. They acquired Samare from Philadelphia, and they plugged him into that starting lineup, and he's been a little shaky so far. But I think that he has fallen victim to a bit of a sophomore slump. We've seen him look a little shaky on certain plays. Again, this weekend, he was out of position and got beat pretty easily for, I believe, one of the goals. I don't know if it was a goal, but it was definitely a chance where he was just beaten really too easily. It's sticking out in my mind. But, yeah, I mean, Barry's got a lot of ability. And I think the frustrating thing from, let's say, a U.S. national team perspective, is a guy like Barry, he comes into the league, and he's going to have some of these growing pains, but the problem is he came into the league after college, and so he was already 22, 23 years old when he was in the league, and so he's trying to iron out some of these issues in his game, which it happens, you know, not everybody's always in good form. But the problem is with Barry is, you know, maybe he has a season or two to adjust, and by the time he's at that level where maybe he's ready to come into the U.S. national team, he's already 26 years old. And, you know, that's not too young, but that's certainly not an ideal age to be debuting for the national team. So, again, it kind of goes back to that player development model in the U.S. And going to college for 4 years is not very advantageous when you're talking about a long, fruitful professional and international career.
Yeah, and it's a debate that will continue to rage throughout U.S. soccer as we see the impact that these players going and taking their time, as you say, in college, where there isn't the funds in the same way that the funds are there for basketball and for American football in college, and whether it is better to stay in these academies and come through like some of the other players we've seen. Seth, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you back on the show today, mate. We always enjoy talking a little bit of U.S. men's national team and Major League Soccer with you. Enjoy the game coming up against Panama on Tuesday night, mate, and hopefully the US men's national team will be putting themselves in a prime position to be almost already through. Enjoy the game coming up against Panama on Tuesday night, mate. And hopefully the US men's national team will be putting themselves in a prime position to be almost already through the hexagonal round and at Brazil 2014.
Yes, and we'll
be putting themselves in a prime position to be almost already through the hexagonal round and at Brazil 2014.
Yes, and we'll talk to you guys soon.
We will definitely catch up again sooner rather than later. Seth Vitelny from Goal.com joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things US men's national team, and of course giving us the heads up and full and exclusive on ESPN UK